Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. TGIF. Thank you for joining us today on G's Power Hour. I've Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. You can tell I'm just like over the moon, I guess you could say, or whatever about it being Friday, but it's a busy weekend, so it'll just fly by like almost every other day. But just thanking the Lord that we're all here today. So, we did not do it last week. We usually do the economy on the first Friday of the month, but it was a holiday weekend and stuff like that. So, you know, still getting you caught up on all things dollars and cents here in the United States and around the world. And we welcome back Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire. How are you, sir? Good morning.
Good morning, Gretchen. I am doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm blessed. Thank you very much. So, let's get started. Lots to talk about. So I'm going to let you take the lead. What did we hit on first?
All right. So, you know, I will touch on the jobs report really quickly, and then I want to make that introduction to James as he is logging in now. But this month, as we typically do, and as I always say, that my favorite economic indicator is the jobs report. And, you know, it was typically released on the first Friday of the month, but because of the data and the way the calendar is set up, it was unable to be released last Friday, so thus we have it this month. And it looks like the number was a little bit better, you know, than expectations. And it's allowed for, you know, the market to digest it in a positive way. The non-farm payroll employment rose by 372,000 in the month of June, and the unemployment rate remained at 3.6%. So, and consistent to what we saw the last several months, the major sectors that led the way were the professional business services, leisure and hospitality, and healthcare. And we know, you know, those last two, the leisure and hospitality and healthcare, is something that is very, very prevalent in the Central Florida economy. So it's good to see we're having strong job growth in that area, which also could play a little bit into our real estate conversation that we'll have, and hopefully provide somewhat of a backdrop for real estate in the state of Florida as we are seeing, you know, some changes take place, you know, on the economic front with the Federal Reserve raising rates. So overall, this was a just give a quick synopsis. This was a very positive jobs report. It's something that, you know, us as analysts we're looking for to be good, but where we are currently in the economy, we don't want the jobs report to be extremely hot or extremely cold. We want it to be kind of lockstep in nature, because if it is one of the other extremes, then the fear of a recession comes in, or the fear of overreaction by the Federal Reserve to take hold. And that's something that we don't want. So it looks like this jobs report on the surface is moving in tandem with how the Federal Reserve has been positioning itself with raising rates and tightening monetary policy. So all in all, it's been a positive so far today. So that's what I wanted to throw in a little bit about the job support, and we can touch on that a little later. But I do have a guest with me online today by the name of James Rivera. He is our credit union manager that we have hired to help lead this ship that we're navigating through on these financial waters. He comes to us from South State Bank with a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of information, and extensive history in the banking industry. Not only, you know, just from the financial experience and the experience with, you know, serving clients and leadership roles in banking, but he's also, you know, a really great guy. He's also a personable guy, and he's great to talk to. He's a family man. He's great, you know, he's been great with even meeting my kids and other individuals at the church. So just to give you an update from where we were last month, we had our official soft opening that took place for the credit union, the Unity of Eatonville Federal Credit Union, back on June the 17th. And since then, we have hit the ground, and we've been running at a million miles an hour and opening up accounts and, you know, adding the services that we want to add, and we're doing really well, and we're getting prepared for our final, our grand opening, I should say, which will take place at the completion of the renovation of our current building, and we're looking forward to that taking place around the beginning of September. So without further ado, I want to turn it over to James and let him, you know, say a couple things about what he's done so far, his history, background, and whatever else he wants to add about the credit union.
Mr. Rivera, good morning. Welcome to G's Power Hour, and thank you for your time. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. How's everyone else doing today?
Doing well. Doing well. Thank you for taking
awesome.
The time.
Well,
so,
no, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I mean, I know, like you said, hitting the ground running, there's a lot going on, especially with something that's new and fresh to the community. So tell us a little bit about what your plans are for Unity of Eatonville.
Well, thank you again for having me. I'm so excited to be part of such an incredible endeavor and actually a historic endeavor for Eatonville. I'm blessed to be a part of such a great team with Paul and the rest of the executive board, the church from Macedonia initiating this initiative, and it's exciting to see what our future holds because it's bright and exciting, and who Unity of Eatonville FCU is, you know, we're a credit union who just received a low-income federal community charter from the NCUA, and the vision came from Sir of Macedonia, from the Missionary Baptist Church, and, you know, he initiated the groundwork, and so we're excited to be a part of the community and allow this community to know that we're here for them. We're excited to see them succeed. We want them to succeed. And we're open to hearing from them and seeing the best way we can service them.
Thank you. So what is the criteria? I know usually, you know, membership is kind of one of the key components of, you know, a credit union. Can you tell me what the criteria is for those that may be interested
sure.
in opening an account?
Sure, sure. As of now, right now, our criteria is going to be if you live in Eatonville, if you work in Eatonville, if you go to school in Eatonville, if you worship in Eatonville, you are part of our membership. You are part of the criteria that allows you to be a part of Unity of Eatonville FCU. We're looking to expand that in the near future where we will be able to reach out to a greater capacity. But as of now, we're looking at the town of Eatonville and excited to have them come on board. If you're part of Eatonville, we want you to be a part of Unity.
So what is the criteria in terms of, is it just regular consumers? Are you allowing business accounts as well?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Right now, what we're starting off with is our savings accounts. In order to open the account, you have to have a shared savings account with us. The minimum is going to be $15 to open that account. But at the moment, what we're just starting off with is the shared savings accounts. And as we continue to go forward, once our building is complete, we're expected to have the ability to offer checking accounts and then continue to add different services and products that you would find at any other credit union or any other bank, you know, from certificates of deposits, lending like unsecured loans, new and used auto loans, you know, online banking, debit cards, all those wonderful services that financial institutions offer.
Okay. And tell me, what kind of partnerships do you have in the community right now?
Right now, for me personally, I am partnered with Macedonia, and I'm looking to continue to grow that partnership. We are looking to get with the chamber. We're looking to grow with the different businesses and meet different business partners here in the town of Eatonville. I'm getting out there to meet everyone. I'm new to the community in that regard. I've lived here in Central Florida for about 20 years. Originally grew up in Brooklyn, New York. My family was smart enough to get me out of there when we were young. But I love being in the middle of a city. I love being a part of a wonderful community as Eatonville. And I'm excited to meet those people in Eatonville who will be a huge part in our success.
So what do you have, let's say, in terms of a goal by the end of the year for the credit union and for the town of Eatonville?
Well, the goal is to bring on as many members as we can. We're hoping to be over maybe 200 people who are members of the credit union. We're building a base, a foundation, and thankfully Macedonia has been a huge part of that, where the staff and the members of the church have come on, and I have appointments set for, gosh, every day for the next 2 to 3 weeks here, with people coming in to open up their accounts. They're excited about what Unity is going to do for the community. They're excited about being a part of something that is going to be historic, and the expectation is to have, gosh, I would say in the next 18 months, we would love to even see another branch opened close by, or in a position where it would allow for other people to be a part of Unity.
That sounds great, because I'm sure once more people hear about what you're doing, they're going to want to become more involved. And the fact that you only need $15 really is a definite draw for a lot of folks. What type of features will you have? Will you at some point have I know right now it does, you kind of I would say a little bit landlocked, but at some point are you looking at maybe expanding a facility to include like a drive-through or anything like that?
Well, like you said, we are kind of landlocked here when it comes to adding that. I think there's the ability to add it. We would just have to see if that's something that's feasible. But we're definitely looking to allow the opportunities for people to still come through with ease, make deposits after hours, before hours, things of that nature. But the hope is to expand even greater with another branch, another location, so that people can go closer to where they are, or you know, let people know that there is more than just one branch.
Okay. And now, can people do direct deposit?
They can. They can. We should actually have that set up here in the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
Where we would be able to allow them to make those deposits into their savings account.
Okay. Okay, so the direct deposit would go into the savings account, and then can you have multiple savings accounts? I guess that's one of the things, too.
Oh, absolutely.
The reason I ask that is because I know for myself I have just my main savings account, but I have another one that I created that certain one of my bills, my primary bills, come out of. So I was just curious in terms of being able to I guess, customize it and tailor-make your account to suit you.
Oh, absolutely. You can have as many savings accounts as you want, and just like any other credit union or bank, you know, those ACH withdrawals that come through, they'll be processed, with accuracy and immediately to make sure that there is no interruption with paying bills and things of that nature. We welcome the direct deposits and the setups for the payments like that. It just allows us to continue to grow in that manner and having people use the savings accounts more and more, which would be amazing.
I know you have to go. What is the contact information, and is there any other last details that I may have overlooked that you want to make sure everybody knows?
Well, they can reach us at 689-710-6027. Again, that was 689-710-6027. That is the line that they can use to directly meet with to contact me. We do also have another landline, a 407-637-5657 that they can call and use. You can hit us up at Twitter at Unity of EFCU, or if you're on Instagram, look us up at Unity of Eatonville FCU. We're on there as well. We're getting things started with social media. We want to blast the community and the internet and let them know that Unity of Eatonville is here. And we want there to be a legacy that is built here in Eatonville.
Well, congratulations for your efforts.
Thank you.
and welcome to the community. And we look forward to the growth that hopefully Unity of Eatonville will spark in the community. So we really appreciate your efforts. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Gretchen, for the opportunity. I totally appreciate
it. We appreciate it, too. Talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Thank you. For sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You, too. James Rivera, Unity of Eatonville. The credit union has opened up in the town of Eatonville. We're going to take a quick break. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arklatex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chilling?
Hi, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And if I can get my fingers out of the way, I'll be fine. We are here talking about the economy with Paul Lee Shelton of Warwick Shore. We're also, because Monday was a holiday, we asked our mortgage guru, Jabir Najir, to join us from Rajan Mortgage to talk about mortgages right now. Jabir, are you there? Good morning.
Yes, I am here. Good morning, Gretchen. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you. I enjoyed the last time we had you both on at the same time. Let's talk a little bit. We still want to talk about some other stuff in the economy, but let's hit the housing market really, really quick. Jabir, can you give us an update on those lovely mortgage rates?
Yes, so we've been pretty much steadily increasing with the rates since March. Sometimes you may hear, you know, in the news, depending on what outlet you listen to, where rates are dropping. But the thing is that when you look at any chart, you know, there's days that things go up, days that things come down. The overall trend still is up. I am definitely hoping that we've hit a peak. I know late last month we hit a, we hit a, we, we, the rates increased above 6%. As of today, it dropped a little bit below 6%, has the national average. I know for us, we still have rates in, you know, depending on the day, of course, in the high 4s to low 5s. So we're able to get a little bit lower than the national average for conventional rates. But you may have a couple of days where things go down and then it starts to increase again. I know as far as today goes, or yesterday and today, looks like rates are starting to tick back up a little bit. But, you know, I don't know. I can't say that they won't start ticking back down in a couple of weeks. But the overall trend definitely is up still.
Gosh, I'm so glad I did my nagging wife role and we got refinanced. more jobs, but more stuff to pay for in terms of the mortgage rate. What about, are we starting to see anything like an uptick in either foreclosures? And you don't hear much about short sales that much anymore, but do you see that occurring with any type of increase?
Well, as far as the foreclosures, me personally, I haven't, but the numbers do say have indicated that the there's an increase in foreclosures. So I'm not sure if these are foreclosures that were put to the side from the pandemic when everybody had the forbearance agreements, and maybe after the forbearance, situations change. Sometimes, you know, depending on the individual, you actually may have went the full term without, you know, you stretched it out to the last month without making a mortgage payment. So you do have certain homeowners that their balances may have increased anywhere from 20 to sometimes 60,000 over the course of, you know, the last couple of years when they have to pay the mortgage. Keep in mind, it's not just the mortgage payment. That's mortgage, interest, taxes, insurance, if the mortgage company is paying that for you. So the mortgage company says, hey, you have X amount of dollars in the arrears. Let's go ahead and catch up with those payments in the next 6 months or 12 months or 24 months. And most of us say, there's no way I could pay back $40,000 in addition to my mortgage in 2 years. So that's where they'll go and try to work out a forbearance. But sometimes the forbearance payment doesn't work for the homeowner. The banks can only stretch things out, but so far they can't, you know, say, okay, we'll stretch out for 70 years. So they want to go ahead and collect those funds within a certain period of time. Now, certain banks, they may put a certain amount to as a silent second mortgage, but at the end of the day, that's really dependent. It really depends on that particular bank. If they're willing to say, hey, you're $35,000 in your arrears, we're going to put $15,000 on the current mortgage that you have to catch up in the next, you know, by the end of your 30-year term, wherever you may be in that term. And then there's going to be the remaining balance that we're going to put to the side that will be due in a lump sum in 20 years. So that's up to a particular bank if they're willing to do that. But certain banks, and I, you know, I don't really want to say this is happening for everybody in foreclosure, but I'm just giving a scenario where it may not work out that the person that has not been paying their mortgage, they are not able to work something out with the bank. But in addition to that, there is a uptick in either hiring freezes for companies or layoffs. It's in the very beginning stages of layoffs. I know a couple weeks ago in the tech industry, you know, to be honest, I haven't actually been keeping up with it every single day. So I don't know the up-to-date numbers for this week, but I know a couple weeks ago there was like 17,000 layoffs in the tech industry.
Paul, do you know about that, Paul?
I do. So there has been a wave of layoffs at tech companies specifically, and that's, you know, pairwise correlated to what we've seen in the stock market, actually, with valuations of many tech companies and growth companies being squeezed and pushed to the limit. I believe, you know, there's no tech company that has been immune to it, even seeing it at one of the largest, you know, tech companies that we consider in Tesla, announcing layoffs and other companies under there, you know, with Salesforce and many, many companies. So I agree with Jabril. We're right there in that arena.
So,
and I think next
know,
is, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jabril.
Well, I was going to quickly say that I think retail is going to come next. I know that a lot of big retailers have definitely mentioned that their inventory is up, but demand is low. is lower.
Mm-hmm.
So I think retail may be the next to have the wave of layoffs or hiring freezes, at least.
Well, I know we were already having an issue with retail beforehand. And one of the things I noticed is because I do a little retail in the evening. One of the things I've noticed, I do online, we have a slew of people canceling stuff, and largely it's because of the supply chain issues that we're seeing with that. We're having a lot of people that are like, I ordered this, expected to get it next month, maybe the month after, and you're telling me it's going to be October. And I need something before then. You know, I had someone last night. It's like, you know, we ordered these chairs back in March. You're telling me they're not going to be here until, you know, August or October or whatever, and we have nothing to sit on. Now,
right.
My thing is go get a cheap chair until they come in and just, you know, donate the chair or something after that, whatever it is. You know, it's amazing to me how much people just, you know, cling to stuff. Like their lives depend on it, but you know, and don't look for alternatives. But it is, you know, we're seeing a lot of that happening from my perspective in terms of cancellations due to supply chain issues. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, Paul, is one of the things that I'm hearing is that the money is not necessarily turning over in the economy the way it was. You know, some people have saved up some of that money that they got during COVID and are not really spending it that much. Is that correct?
I haven't seen any data to really speak to M2 money or the circulation of money that much. I actually hadn't focused on it recently. So I could say that on the surface, on some of the things that I've seen from a global standpoint, is a lot of things that really drives, you know, the dollar that moves around globally is travel,
mm-hmm.
Leisure and travel. And I can
mm-hmm.
say from the standpoint of a U.S. citizen viewing it, international travel, that has not returned, which we expect should return because we're near the pairwise level with the U.S. dollar and the euro. But we have not seen U.S. citizens travel abroad like we have seen historically in the past before the pandemic and things of that nature. With that being the backdrop and looking at it from a macro level and coming down micro, it's very possible that circulation of dollar could be changing. You won't see that M2 flow as much because of the lack of international travel, which then in turn mean that we should be seeing a rise in the circulation of dollars within the border. But I just haven't seen that as of yet.
So if they're not spending on international travel, then, Jabir, are you seeing, like, let's say, are they spending on buying the homes? Are we seeing an increase in the number of mortgages maybe? People just, you know, keeping the dollars close to the home base.
No, mortgage applications are down both for purchasing and refinancing. Are people still refinancing? Yes. Are people still purchasing? Yes. There is
mm-hmm.
still a need. However, the demand is definitely lower. There are – some of it is just because some people may be sitting on the sidelines. They do have cash, but they're sitting on the sidelines. And some people just have been priced out of the market. When they – even though they were stretching themselves to purchase a home at today's – home, what the prices of homes may be in your area,
mm-hmm.
in their area, when the rates start to increase, it really starts to price people out of that, out of the market. In addition
and
to that, there.
And okay. I was going to say, it's not just the rates. We've got insurance issues right now, and you know, that is really making people struggle. And then, you know, the thing is, people used to say, well, okay, I can't buy anything right now, maybe I will wait a little bit and purchase something later, I'll just go rent something. Rent is almost as ridiculous or more so these days. Why would you consider renting? I've heard, for example, rent for a one-bedroom apartment, I thought I heard $1,700 a month for a one-bedroom apartment. I could be wrong. But my thing is, that is more than what I'm paying for my house. You know, why
actually,
I would go out
on what area.
Spend, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, depending on what area you're in, I've heard more than that for one bedroom. So, it's gotten pretty crazy in a very short period of time.
Yeah. So I mean, and that's going to, unfortunately, I think, impact our homeless situation, too, right now. So even if you have more jobs and hopefully some salaries will have gone up, that's the thing. Paul, can you tell me anything about wages? Are we seeing? I know there was this shift at one point in time to say, "Hey, you need to move the minimum wage up to $15." I know some people did. I've seen signs in some windows that people did that. Move it up. Some of them not so much to $15, but they did show an increase. Have we seen more of that happening recently? What kind of impact does that have? Because I've also heard in the past that if you start doing increases in wages, you start cutting back people. And I was wondering if that's why the layoffs are being triggered right now.
Yeah, so it is a balancing act that you must have when you're seeing wage inflation or you're increasing the minimum wage in totality. We talked about it before. You know, if you have a registered nurse that's making $30 and someone that's working at Bank of America as a teller that's making $26, there's a disincentive for them to go to college and become a nurse and to essentially educate yourself or grow in any educational capacity to reach newer heights. So there is that, you know, dichotomy that can take place as we see across the board minimum wage increases. However, we have seen organic wage inflation, and because of the current state of the employment market right now, we will continue to see wage inflation for the near-term future. Now, we'll get to the point where we're possibly trying to figure that out now, where we're seeing some sectorial shifts in different industries in our economy when it comes to hiring and laying off. We may be getting to that point where we're rounding out the number and starting to plateau. Possibly when we get more participants and get an increase in that labor force participation rate, then we'll see, instead of Americans having two jobs for every American that's seeking a position out there, it may be a one-to-one pairwise or fall to down to a 0.7 or 0.6 positions open for every individual that's looking. That will stymie that wage inflation and put it in check, and then we'll essentially start seeing some normalization in the wage, you know, rate as it is. Unfortunately, all this is culminating at a time where we had not seen significant wage inflation in this economy in nearly 20-plus years. So there is some pent-up demand for higher wages. There is some pent-up demand for a better, you know, work-life lifestyle. So all of that is culminating together at the same time, and unfortunately, we're going to have to hold on to the horns of the bull and just ride through it and see where everything is going to shake out. There is no clear picture to say that we are essentially going to hit a reset button across all sectors. We're seeing somewhat of a reset on the tech sector, as was mentioned earlier, when it comes to employment and like I mentioned, pairwise correlation. That was the sector the area of the economy that did the best in recovery during the pandemic. So it's only natural that you see a little bit of an easing in that area as of now.
We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Paul V. Shelton, Jr. of Warwickshire, and Jabir Najir of Rajan Mortgage. We're talking about the housing market and the economy, other sectors. And no, you can't call in today. This is pre-recorded. Sorry, but another time. But you can always send me your questions, and we can address them in the future. I'm always willing to pass that along. So anyway, this is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Mm-hmm. Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking the housing market. We are talking other areas of the economy. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire, and we are here with Jabir Najer of Rajan Mortgage. And I'm sorry, you can't call in, but you can always send me your questions. I'll be happy to forward them. This is just not one of those days to call in. So I wanted to ask basically, summertime, Jabir, is this a typical summer as compared to in the past with the housing market from what you see in terms of mortgages?
No. Typically during the summer you see a lot more going on because people are moving before, you know, especially those with families. It's usually the time that a lot of families would like to move if they're not on vacation before and get their children into the new school zones or the new, you know, situated before school starts. Not saying that people are not moving. That may be happening in the rental market. I don't really deal with rentals, so I wouldn't know how much people are moving. People are definitely needing places to live, of course. So I'm not sure how many people are moving from their current location they may be renting. However, when it comes to mortgages, yes, it's definitely down. And I think that just comes to what I mentioned before. Everybody's either waiting out the market or they just got priced out of the market. So we'll have to see how things go later on in the year, see how the economy, you know, how everything works out with the economy and where rates go, where prices of homes go as well.
True, true. I mean, because and the thing about it is, I mean, like we talked about wages and dollars and stuff, there's only so much you can get out of $1. It just doesn't matter. And you just got to decide what goes toward eating, what goes toward having a house, what goes toward the car, and all that kind of stuff, you know. School coming up, people are probably getting ready for whatever school supplies they might, you know, need and other things. I ran into a teacher the other day. I was purchasing something on clearance. I saw it a couple of weeks before. I got a couple of whatever it was. More of that, there were some, like, little bins and stuff. I saw a teacher, she was filling her basket with these bins, and she's like, got to get myself organized for the school year, you know. And so she cleaned out the clearance rack of these bins, you know. And it's a shame, you know, because the wages aren't necessarily keeping up with the needs for schools, you know. And I'm sure there are other areas that are like that as well, you know. So, you know, now these days, I mean, for the most part, we have two-income households. It's still just not meeting the need, unfortunately. So I think at some point they were going to have to back down in terms of the increase in the price of housing and a lot of other increases. I think some things are just going to have to be put in check, and people are going to also have to put themselves in check, I think, in terms of not necessarily having to get the dream home right away, or getting a fixer-upper and making it into their dream home, you know. But there's so many people that you have a hard time convincing to just not get into something that's move-in ready, that they need to get into something that is going to meet their needs right now and then maybe meet their desires later as they, you know, take the time to improve what they have. So, yes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think for me, I still see not as many flips as at one point, but you still do see them every once in a while where the buyer is purchasing a home that, you know, investor purchased, fixed up, and, of course, they're selling it for a profit. So if the buyer is able to see the vision prior to all those improvements to the home, they could definitely save quite a bit of money. Of course, mm-hmm. we have both the conventional and FHA rehab loans. So we will actually finance the cost to rehab the property. But as long as you're able to see past whatever you're looking at,
right.
whether it's just simple things as far as paint, it could be a new roof, it could be new floors, kitchen, water heater, AC, pretty much anything except for the pool is usually the one challenge when it comes to any type of rehab. We can't really do any rehabs on pools, just crazy guideline. But if you're able to see past everything else, you could save yourself a lot of money if you run across a home that is distressed and needs some work, and hopefully walk into a home with some equity. So if there is a slip in the market, you shouldn't be hit as hard as somebody who purchased at the what the home may be valued at the top of the market. Or mm-hmm. you still do see nowadays that people are still, in certain cases, not as many as maybe not as much as last year, still paying above appraised value for the home because people need a place to live. And if
yep.
there's not a property on the market and you have a spouse and two kids and a dog that need a place to live, sometimes, you know, your hand is forced to move forward.
Yeah. So, Paul, now, you know, we've talked a little bit about the housing market, but, I mean, there's other areas right now. The gas is going, it's down right now, but is that still kind of a flaky area? What is driving that?
There's a couple different forces that are driving it. Speculation is starting to pick back into it as well. Not as much as we saw back in 2008 and 2009, but it mm-hmm. is a part of it. What we have seen, though, recently is, you know, gas is operated, and crude oil and all the energy is operated on a true supply and demand construct. Right now, demand has been destructed a little bit through the pandemic, but it has come back and has roared back since about June of 2020. And that's where we see a lot of, you know, the bottoming out of energy and gas prices at that time. As of today, what we're realizing is that there is a pullback in some of the consumption. People are not traveling as much this summer as there was were anticipated. There is some travel out there. I should say there's a, you know, been a shortage, or it's hard to find rental cars. So hard to, you know, there's a lot of air travel that still takes place, but, you know, that international travel, that component is still missing to a certain degree. Significant business travel is still missing to a certain degree. I've attended some conferences, but I haven't traveled outside of the state, which, you know, typically I do travel outside of the state. So there's, and even with some of the conferences that are taking place now, it appears that all of them are offering in-person and a Zoom option, which more than likely will be the construct that we're going to see going forward. So I think we're going to end up in a somewhat of a permanent shift in demand of that demand curve on how crude oil is going to be consumed. Most recently, we've seen supply that has etched up a little bit because of the lockdowns that have taken place in China. The COVID-related lockdowns took a lot of cars and a lot of transportation and a lot of energy consumption off the table. Now, we are in a hot summer that we are in the midst of, and it's going to rage on for a little bit more. So as things start to rise on the other side of the planet when it comes to COVID and those lockdowns are lifted off of China and we're raging through this hot summer, we could see energy prices, you know, resurge again. But something that we saw take place on Wednesday and Thursday of this week is that crude oil settled below $100 a barrel, which was the first time that that has happened in about 3 or 4 months.
Right.
A good thing, because that does provide a little reprieve for consumers in total. You know, as I've always said, gas is a de facto tax on all citizens of an economy. It's something that we just cannot get around, whether we consume it directly or we lean on its consumption by having Amazon deliver something to our house. It's just something that we cannot get around, unfortunately. So we are seeing a little reprieve as of right now, but unfortunately, it potentially could be short-lived, especially if we do have somewhat of an active hurricane season.
Let me ask you about, because you mentioned Amazon, and I started thinking about shipping and supply chain issues again. Are the difficulties that the consumers are having with the supply chain issues with the getting stuff, you know, and or having it delayed and getting there, is that helpful to local economies?
It's helpful to local economies if the local economies can deliver upon that demand. Unfortunately, many local small businesses that are not suppliers and manufacturers all in one are unable to manufacture that chair and sell it in their store at the same time. So they don't have the construct to be able to keep up with the demand that would be coming their way as opposed to the demand that they would be losing from or garnering, or I should say cannibalizing from a larger competitor. So in essence, you know, some of the common goods that we use, you know, when it comes to, you know, healthcare products, hair care products, and things of that nature, if there is, you know, somewhat of a, you know, inability to garner those in normal channels, I have seen, you know, people able to find them at farmers markets and develop substitutes, substitutes for soaps, organic candles, and different things of that nature that people are finding with shopping locally. I do have, you know, there's a retail shop that was next to my location, which was a clothing store. The pandemic has actually helped their business significantly. She was in a location next to me for 7 years, and she just had to move out to Winter Garden because she needed much more space. Now, she is one of those that manufactures and sells. She makes the clothes. She does, you know, buy a lot of stuff that she that is sold in her store, but there are things that she makes, brings in, and she's able to source in-house and provide that product, you know, to her clients. So the pandemic helped her business grow significantly in that respect, because she was a neighborhood store that people can go to, find those fashions and be able, you know, to grow.
I have an idea I want to run by you and ask you if it's feasible, and that is, I may be using the term incorrectly, but what about a co-op type situation where small like businesses could get together and share resources? For example, storage. Let's say you would like to sell more of a product, but you have a storage issue, but you can't necessarily afford a large storage facility. But maybe you could go into with another small business that has, you know, a product that, let's say, you all don't necessarily need an air-conditioned storage facility, but you need just a storage facility, and you all could get together and go in on it. For small businesses with limited resources or having to pay more for the materials because they're not buying it in large quantities, I think this is a way to keep costs down. So I wanted to run it by you and see what you thought.
It is. That is a definitely a great idea and a way to, you know, control expenses. It's a matter of finding those synergies between two like-minded businesses that will be able to strike that agreement and have it flow functionally. As we know, with any type of, you know, merger, if you were to bring two businesses together that were going, that agreed to work together and attack the world in sales, there's always differences of opinions. And when you have a shared space or co-op space where my inventory is next to your inventory, or, you know, go back to the days where you're in college and you have a roommate and you say, hey, that was my lemonade you just drunk, you know. You don't want to run into, you know, some of those situations. But on the inverse, I would say not necessarily with the storage of goods, but also with the commonality of services. That is something that is seen in the credit union world, and I've been more familiar with that a lot recently, But that's something that is known very, very, very well in the credit union community, and those are called CUSOs, and those are credit union service organizations. And many credit unions that we know, such as McCoy, they have a CUSO with a few other credit unions, and what they do is they get together other like-minded entities, other credit unions, and say, you know what, it's not feasible for us to have, for example, a healthcare plan just for our employees to satisfy this, this, and this. So let's band together with a few other credit unions. Let's pool our resources. Let's develop a CUSO that can go out there and be the healthcare arm for all of our businesses, to spell out which doctors our employees can go to and, you know, pay for that healthcare service for them. There's other CUSOs out there that, you know, satisfy more tangible things, such as helping small credit unions or financial institutions with compliance auditing, things of that nature, so that it's not all, you know, encompassing or burdensome for one entity. So, you know, you're very correct in your line of thinking in that respect. When it comes to the other industries outside of, I guess I would say, the banking world, you would have to do a little bit more research and understanding on how those particular industries work and the ability for each entity to be able to buy into the concept and be a, you know, truly fruitful partner.
So we've only got a limited time amount of time left. I want to go back to you, Devere, and ask you, okay, you know, what type of things we need to be looking at in the next month with regards to the mortgage industry and the housing market? Jabir? Oh, did we lose him? Okay, all right. Because I was blowing through the commercial break. Oh, you're there. Okay, good.
Can you hear me? Okay, I think you
yes,
could
hear
me.
You.
Sorry, I think I may have been muted. Yeah, so, I was saying that, the thing that I would suggest to anybody, if they're currently in the market to purchase, you really just have to really pay attention to your particular market. Every market is different. The things that are going on the west coast of Florida are different than what's going on in central Florida. So you just have to really pay attention to your local market and also just be prepared. I would also suggest, as I always have suggested, that anybody go through the process of being pre-approved prior to being ready to purchase a home, because you don't want to get into the chance that you are ready to move forward on an opportunity and you haven't prepared yourself to purchase and then you miss out on the opportunity. Now, if you currently own a home, there's a couple of things that you could do. There's a lot of people who have a lot of understand that interest rates are higher, but the one thing is that a lot of people have actually relied on credit cards to float themselves over from month to month recently, and the credit card debts are at an all-time high. Now, I'm not necessarily a fan, I will say, of continuing to use your home as a tool to eliminate credit card debt, because I have experienced clients who have come to me multiple times to pay off the same credit cards over and over again. So I'm not going to steer you away from that, but my thing is to really manage your credit if you do use your house as a tool to eliminate the credit card debt, whether it's through a HELOC or cash out refinance, debt consolidation refinance, because you also don't want to be in a position where I have seen where people end up losing everything because they really, really don't want to refinance their home because everybody tells them don't refinance your home to pay off debt, and then eventually they're just so overwhelmed with, you know, just their monthly liabilities with increasing cost of, you know, just living, that they lose everything. So you can actually still benefit from refinancing to eliminate that debt, and we're still doing that for people. Some people are saving anywhere between $300 to $800. Just depends on how much debt you have. So that definitely is a possible thing that you could still take advantage of, even an increase in interest rate environment. But if you do that, the one thing I will say is to really manage the debt that you've paid off. I know it sounds crazy to manage debt that you no longer have, but we have seen that many times that people start to rely on the same credit card that they've actually just recently paid off.
Wow. Okay, some good advice. Paul, quick question about recession, economic downturn. Is that an actuality? Is that happening?
you know, one thing that's evident and that's true, all, if you even go back to 1775, I have a chart in my office that talks about economic booms and busts, is mm-hmm. that we're either leaving or heading to a recession. So the possibilities are always there. It's just a matter of what the timing of that will be. From an economic standpoint, we know the bond market has told us over the last several days with the yield curve being inverted that we are heading into a recession. But that never tells us the depth of the recession or the width, how long that recession is going to last. And it doesn't essentially say that we will have a very, very flattish, you know, type of recession. What I foresee taking place right now, if I were to look into a crystal ball that's filled with a bunch of smoke, would be that the stock market is pricing in a recession right now. Will we necessarily realize it in the economic market? Possibly, but not across all wealth classes of the economy, unfortunately. We know that the stock market typically is a leading indicator for what the economics will do in an economy. It's the same as looking at the yield curve. The long end of the yield curve is typically a predictor of where the economy is heading. And as we're seeing that the yield curve invert, it's starting to show that we're heading down. We're heading in a downward, you know, trajectory. But some of the things that, you know, Jabril has pointed out deals with the wealth of America, deals with that home ownership. Those that are able to still buy have the capacity to do so. And a recession may not be it that it will be a lighter recession if it takes hold, will not affect them in the same capacity that it would affect someone else that was priced out of the market and unable to take advantage of a wealth-building tool such as purchasing a home. In this particular cycle, I should say. So will we see a recession in the next 18 months or so? I think the possibilities are there. The Federal Reserve has never engineered a soft landing by nature to get to slow down the economy using the Federal mm-hmm. Open Market Committee tools. They're designed to make the economy recessionary. So we've never, you know, been able to recess the economy without tasting a recession. Very similar in medicine sometimes. You know, we often, you know, get flu shots, and, you know, when you get the flu shot, you get a little bit of soreness from symptoms of the flu. You may not necessarily have the flu. Sometimes you get it full on. But you're still getting that medicine. And right now what we're doing is we're taking our economic medicine right now through the Federal Open Market Committee decisions that the Federal Reserve is making. And it is driving the economy towards a recession, but it won't look like what we've traditionally seen as a recession, not like back in 1987, not like even what we saw in 2008 and 2009, where it's widespread across the board.
Okay, so one other real quick thing, because we're going to have to go. There have been a couple of, high-profile changes in other countries, and I want to see real quick how that affects us. One is Boris Johnson's resignation. The other one was the murder of the former prime minister of Japan. Can you talk about that real quick, Paul?
Yeah. So both of those are very, very large geopolitical events that have taken place. It was very shocking to see about Shinzo Abe's death, and very sad to hear. He's a big proponent of economics and doing a lot of things to try to drive Japan from the stagflation that they had been suffering for quite a long time to where we are today. So that. Because he was running for an election and trying to be reinstated into power, we won't see a significant as a blow, you know, to us directly, but it is a blow to policy worldwide to see that things could be taken out in this nature, especially in a country that in 2021 only had 10 homicides by gun acts. So that's very, very troubling. And again, we see it. And yeah, and I know we're out of time there. So
yeah, we're
so
out
much.
Of time. But we're going to talk about it some more next month, hopefully. God willing, Jabir and Paul, thank you so much for taking the time out today. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed. Enjoy your weekend. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right.